Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, September 14th. On this day in 1812, French military leader Napoleon and his forces enter the city of Moscow after their successful efforts defeating Russian troops at the Battle of Borodino, only to find the Russian city deserted. Although his early efforts led to victory, the incursion into Russia proved to be his downfall, as his army suffered numerous setbacks in subsequent months, trying to fight against entrenched troops and loyal citizens amidst the brutal Russian winter. In 1847, U.S. General Winfield Scott captures Mexico City, and troops raise the American flag in the halls of Montezuma during the successful campaign in the Mexican-American War. The conflict would result in the surrender by Mexico and a subsequent agreement with the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo to give up an enormous amount of territory to an America which doubled the size of the United States, adding valuable mineral resources to our nation that would continue to fuel economic development during the latter stages of the Industrial Revolution. And in 1959, a Soviet rocket reaches the surface of the moon, 2 years after the Russians launched Sputnik, shocking American political leaders and space scientists who thought the U.S. was falling behind in what became known as the space race. The Soviet successes invigorated NASA workers to produce space vehicles in a program that eventually brought the first men to the moon a decade later. Many people around the country and around the world enjoy fine art and treasures from the past. Paintings, sculptures, exquisite pottery, and artwork from centuries before. These items are best showcased in museums, where trained, experienced personnel protect, preserve, and display them for the public to view and appreciate. The Philadelphia Museum of Art is one of the most renowned entities in the world, showcasing tens of thousands of these treasures for all to see. From Renaissance masters to the Impressionists, from ancient artifacts and structures to modern art, the museum has them all displayed in exhibits designed to capture your attention, hold your interest, and spark your imagination. Alexandra Kirtley is the curator for American Decorative Arts at the museum, and she oversees the current exhibit titled Classical Splendor, Painted Furniture for a Grand Philadelphia House, which highlights numerous pieces of painted and gilded furniture from the early 19th century. Alexandra is here with us today to talk about this great museum, a gem in the city of Philadelphia, that attracts thousands of visitors every week to see its many exhibits and displays that cover thousands of years of history. Alexandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Gene.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, the Philadelphia Art Museum is really pretty well known around the nation, one of the very, very best museums in the country, perhaps one of the best in the world. And, you know, you have a superb range of art objects and historic artifacts. Just in general, tell us a little bit about some of the more interesting exhibits there now.
Well, currently, we have just closed Embracing the Contemporary, which showcased a gift of two local collectors, Kathy and Keith Sachs, who are collectors of contemporary art and who are giving their collection to us. So that just closed this past, or 2 weeks ago, on September 5th. And right now, we have Classical Splendor open, and we have a wonderful collection of American ceramics, contemporary ceramics, modern and contemporary ceramics that are in the American galleries. And we are getting ready to open two major exhibits. One of them is Painting the Revolution, which is Mexican modernism from 1910 to 1950. And the second is a reinstallation of our South Asian art collections. Mexican modernism opens October 22nd, and the new South Asian galleries open on September 1st. The exhibit that I've been working on is the only one open currently, and that opened on September 3rd, and we are thrilled to have Classical Splendor on view and are getting wonderful reviews and experiences from visitors.
Well, the Classical Splendor sounds very interesting. Now, I have seen some wonderful pieces of 200, 300-year-old American furniture. I assume that you've got a lot of prized pieces there in that exhibit. Just tell us a little bit about more of that exhibit.
Well, you're right. You're right, Gene. The Philadelphia Museum's collection is well known for having the finest collection of Philadelphia furniture in the country. This exhibition focuses on one set of furniture that was made for a house that stood at the southeast corner of Chestnut and 7th Street. The house was designed by architect Benjamin Henry Latrobe. It was built for a China trade merchant whose name was William Wan and his wife Mary Wilcox Wan. The house was designed beginning in 1805. It was completed in 1808. The furniture for the two most formal rooms in the house, the two south-facing drawing rooms, they faced onto a large garden. The furniture was also designed by the architect Henry Latrobe. And this is something, a phenomenon that is hundreds of years old, that architects design not only the spaces, the framework for the interiors, but elements of the interiors as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, this sounds like this house was perhaps just a few blocks away from where the George Washington's house was. Is that correct?
That is correct. He was at Market and between 5th and 6th, and this was Chestnut between 6th and 7th. So it was one block west of the State House, which, of course, we call today Independence Hall.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Now, you mentioned in the description of the exhibit that it's 19th century painted and gilded furniture. Do some of the pieces have, let's say, brass or gold plate on them? Any metallic plating?
No, actually. The furniture is designed, again, by Henry Latrobe in a very forward-looking style, the Clismo style. So it's a style of chair, mainly chair, that has these inwardly sweeping backs and legs. So it's looking at Greek pottery and taking the furnishings that are painted on ancient Greek pottery and actually building that furniture. So it's at once looking backwards to the Greeks, to the fabulous antiquity, and it's also, however, looking futuristically. Mm. So the furniture is timeless in that way that classical art is. The furniture was made in this Clismos style and then painted, has a black ground, and then it has red and yellow, and then it was gilded. So there's actually gold leaf. They're actually painting in gold leaf on the furniture, and then using vermilion and a toned shellac to paint over top of that gold leaf to have it imitate mounts. So it looks like it's like a trompe l'oeil, which is a term for fooling the eye. It looks from afar like bronze furniture with three-dimensional mounts on top of it, but it is in fact painted and gilded.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so this sounds very unique. Is all the furniture in this display 100% original, or was some of it kind of refurbished with some additions or, you know, kind of refurbishments in later years?
Actually, that's a great question. The furniture is in remarkable condition. So we had, of the seven chairs that the Philadelphia Museum of Art owns, we had a few that had been broken and repaired not so well. So we repaired those old repairs. The surfaces have been treated by a conservator at the museum, Peggy Ollie, and the furniture was so loved throughout the 200 some years since it was made that the people who owned it continued to add varnish layers, so like a clear coat varnish on top of the painted and gilded decoration to preserve it. And so what Peggy did was to remove not all, but just the top layers of varnish. Mm-hmm. So there are several. There was the original layer of varnish and two or three more on top of that. But she took off as many as 5, 6, 7 layers of varnish so that you can actually read the painted and gilded decoration much better, much closer to the artist's intention.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are a curator of the special American furniture and related items there. How long have you been focusing on this aspect of art and history?
Well, I went to graduate school in the late 90s, and I have been at the Philadelphia Museum of Art for 15 years.
Mm-hmm. And your work in graduate school was focusing on...
Yes, so my work actually in undergrad, my work focused on European Renaissance and Baroque art. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to return to graduate school to focus on American decorative arts.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, on the topic of the furniture, I've seen many, many pieces from the 18th century and early 19th century. What strikes me is that many of them are just truly elegant. They're very different from a lot of the furniture we see today. You sit down and you think you're sitting in something special. And maybe you could comment on that.
Yes, furniture was designed and made as preciously as a work of sculpture in that time. So the late 18th and early 19th century is a period when the details of somebody's personal life, their domestic life, were tended to very carefully. And so each element of somebody's in life, their domestic life, they wanted to treat as a work of art. So furniture was designed just like any other sculpture. There was a composition to it, just like a painting. And so you will notice, in fact, that the proportions are particularly pleasing, as well as actually the feel of sitting in the chair. In this special exhibition, Classical Splendor, we did make reproductions of the chairs so that visitors could sit in the chairs and actually experience how nicely a well-designed chair comports to the body and actually gives you a really comfortable seat.
Excellent. Well, we're just about to take a brief commercial break, but stay with us. We'll be right back with Alexander Kirtley of the Philadelphia Museum of Art.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call, and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini services Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
WCHE, Chester County's local news source that not only tells you what's happening, but is committed to telling you the behind-the-scenes reason why it's happening.
Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today we're talking with Alexandra Kirtley, the curator of the American Decorative Arts Department at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, and currently hosting a wonderful exhibit called Classical Splendor, Painted Furniture for a Grand Philadelphia House. Alexandra, the exhibit sounds really wonderful. I have to get over to the museum to see it. I think you mentioned in some of the materials that you sent that you're going to have some special events in terms of members and public viewings. I think you said there's a coffee and conversation on Friday, October 7th?
That is correct. We have a special coffee then with, I will be there as well as my colleague from conservation who also worked on the exhibition with me named Peggy Ollie. And we will be there to visit with guests and hear their responses and also answer any questions, give more details, a little behind the scenes. We're also hosting a symposium on Friday, November 4th, where we have a number of speakers from around the country. And at the end of the day, keynote speaker from New York City-based architect named Annabelle Seldorf, and she, like Henry Latrobe, who designed several buildings in Philadelphia as well as the furniture that is the subject of the exhibition, Annabelle also designs interiors for the buildings that she designs.
Oh, that's wonderful. So to our listeners, if you'd like to get down to the museum and see this exhibit, I think you'll truly enjoy it and the various events and activities they have planned. Stepping back a bit, the museum is such a wonderful building. It's so beautiful. People know it from the movie Rocky, of course, and it's just a lovely structure. Its beginnings go back well over 100 years. Could you tell us just a little bit about the beginnings of the museum?
Yes, the museum was founded in 1876. It was sort of an outgrowth of the centennial celebration, and it was based really on the Victoria and Albert Museum, which at the time was called the Kensington Museum in London, which had been an outgrowth of the 1851 Crystal Palace exhibition. Hmm. The museum was founded as a decorative arts museum that was celebrating what was called industrial arts. It was located, of course, in Fairmount Park at Memorial Hall, which was one of the permanent structures of the centennial. And it evolved over time to be really the city's center for fine and decorative arts from around the world. Mm. The building itself that we now house was completed in 1928. The firm of Horace Trumbauer, architect Julian Abel was also a part of that architectural team. And it was built, of course, on top of the reservoir. The former reservoir from the Fairmount Waterworks, the 1820s Frederick Graff Waterworks.
Mm-hmm. The building itself is huge, but I guess a lot of people don't know that. I guess the Rodin Museum is associated with the museum. Is that correct?
Yes, we have. We have several sites. You know, we have not only the Rodin Museum, which houses the sculpture of Auguste Rodin, but we also oversee Mount Pleasant and Cedar Grove, two historic houses in Fairmount Park. Mm. So we have the historic houses, the Rodin Museum, our main building, as well as the Perlman Building, which is across the street from the museum, also a Trumbauer structure, and a former insurance building. That is where we have several exhibitions of modern and contemporary art. We just finished up with our third year of Art Splash, which is a children's summer activity, as well as Creative Africa. And Creative Africa, elements of Creative Africa are still open, and those are five exhibitions celebrating the art from Africa.
Fascinating. Now, the building, which most people know as the main art museum, is over 800,000 square feet. That's enormous.
I know. It doesn't seem like enough sometimes, though.
Yeah, and apparently you've got roughly 500 people working at the museum in various departments. That's an enormous staff as well, and that includes full-time, part-time people. When people come to the museum, what do they experience first upon walking right in the entrance? What grabs them first?
Well, I think it's all. It's a very large space, the Great Stair Hall. If you come from the east side of the building, if you enter into the west side, the Lenfest Hall, they're both very large spaces with lots of options for visiting art and seeing art. Of course, if you come in through the east entrance, which most people would know as the Rocky entrance, if you came into that entrance, you look up, you see ghosts, you see St. Gaudens' sculpture of Diana, which was came to us from New York, has recently been regilded, and you see the Constantine tapestries. And again, you have you can go to American art, you can see special exhibitions, European art, our famous arms and armor collections, European art, modern and contemporary. So there's so much to see, and of course our Asian galleries, our South Asian galleries, will be opening again, as I mentioned, October 1st.
Now, do you still have the large Calder sculpture, or were they
that's the ghost, yes.
Yeah, that's the ghost. Okay, that's
right.
I have always noticed that. As soon as I walk in, it grabs my attention. The museum is really just a fascinating place. You have American art, contemporary art, costumes and textiles, East Asian art, European decorative arts, European painting and sculpture, prints, drawings and photographs, and South Asian art departments. That's an enormous range.
It is.
Which makes it such a special place. Some people know the museum for, I think, what has been called Art After Dark events over the years with live music, food, and beverages. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, they're wonderful. They're absolutely wonderful events on Wednesdays and Fridays. And the museum is just a buzz with visitors who may have come to see, to hear the music, but then they end up strolling the galleries and making unexpected friends with some of our treasures in our permanent collection. And food is being served, and people are really relaxing amongst these incredible works of art. And so for us, it's just a wonderful, for us as curators, as staff members at the museum, it's always a pleasure to see people here enjoying the works of art that we tend to so carefully and lovingly.
You still do those Art After Dark events going forward?
Yes, we do.
Yes, you. Yeah, I've been to a few of them. They're absolutely wonderful. They're really
a
lot of fun.
One time I was coming through the galleries, and they were doing a sound check for the artist who was performing at the Art After Dark, and it was Don McLean singing American Pie, which is one of my very favorite songs in the whole world. And I sat there and had like all but a personal experience, and it was great.
God, I wish I could have seen that. That would have been great. The museum is large, but you do what's called rotating of exhibits. You can't show everything at all at one time. So how often do you rotate them? Do you get many requests for certain types of exhibits to be highlighted? How do you decide what is shown at any one particular time?
Right. So as a curator, we look at our permanent collection galleries, our permanent collection. So those are the works of art that the museum owns. And we create a narrative. So we work with the education team. We work with interpretation, and we have a narrative, but there we choose the works of art that illustrate that narrative. So sometimes there are several works of art that may serve to illustrate that narrative, and so we rotate as much as possible. There are certain works of art that are always on view, unless they're in conservation or out on loan, but they're pretty much always on view. But I like to rotate the works of art as often as I can, and a lot of times it has to do with the availability of the art handlers, who are really important members of our force here. And so they're able to, we try to rotate it so that members, Philadelphians, our local constituency, when they come to the museum, they're not seeing just the same old things. They're seeing old friends and making new friends with the works of art that we put out.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I remember correctly, I hope I have the museum correct, one of the walls is a large Chagall painting. Is that correct?
Well, it's actually a backdrop from it's when you enter the west entrance, it's a backdrop from a theater, and that is correct. It is a Chagall, and it has been hanging there. It's certainly the perfect spot for it, because there are only so many walls in any building, even one as large as ours, that can handle that size. I don't know the exact dimensions.
It's huge.
It is huge. It is huge. I don't know. It would be on our website, the exact dimensions.
Yeah,
but
that,
yes.
That always captures my attention. I love that painting.
Yeah.
Or that background. I mean, that is a part of his, that was one of his original paintings, correct?
That is.
Yeah.
That is an original.
Just,
yes, it is.
Just a lovely piece.
You know, it's interesting that you notice that because Chagall, he painted that, as you mentioned, it's a theatrical backdrop. And the man who painted the furniture that is the subject of my special exhibition, his name was George Bridport. He was trained in London in the late 18th, early 19th century as a theatrical set designer.
Mm.
And he painted not only the furniture, but he painted the walls inside this house. And so theater and artists have always been sort of inextricably linked.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, do you ever accept, you know, just general donations from the public? I mean, you just mentioned you're taking on some collection, but how often does that happen? Do people will or just gift artworks to the museum?
Well, it's one of the favorite phone calls that we as curators receive. We get phone calls or emails from extremely generous members of the public who own a work of art and want to see it in a public collection. They believe that art, you know, they want it to be in the public collection so that the public can come and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we are so lucky to have so many people call and offer to donate works of art to our collection.
That is wonderful. Do you have a speaker series?
We do have a speaker series, and those would be available on our website. We have a number of endowed lectures that happen throughout the year and other programs such as the symposium that I mentioned.
And the website is philamuseum.org. That's P-H-I-L-A museum.org. And you can see all their various exhibits and programs there. Just tell us about some other special events coming in the months and next year ahead.
Well, we have American Watercolors, which opens in February, and we have several other exhibitions coming up. Those would be on our website as well. But, you know, Gene, I wanted to mention one thing.
Mm-hmm.
September 14th is another auspicious day. This is the day that that the British were defeated at Fort McHenry in Baltimore. And it's an important day for us in Philadelphia because the British were headed to Philadelphia, and had they not been stopped in Baltimore, things might have been a little different. So
that is correct. Yes, the Star Spangled Banner was started to be penned yesterday on this date, but 200 years ago. But yes, today, 200 years ago, or 202 years ago.
That's right.
They were defeated and decided not to go any further. When people come to the museum, what do you want them to leave with? What's the mission to kind of give people something to go away with?
We want them to leave inspired. Inspired. They've just seen something that made them feel really good, and it wasn't something expected, right? So it was an unexpected inspiration, and they leave here happy, and they want to come back, and they want to tell their friends to come back, because art, as I said earlier, is meant to be shared and appreciated, and not everybody's going to react the same way to every work of art. So visitors can come here and find the one thing that they like.
That is true, and I have been to the museum several times along with other museums all around the country, and I can say to our listeners, the Philadelphia Museum is one of the greatest museums in the world. If you want to see Van Gogh's Sunflowers, Monet's Japanese Brigitte Giovanni, Edward Degas' Little Dancer, and others, they're all there. So, Alexandra, thank you so much for being with us today. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show. Be sure to tune in next week, Wednesday, September 21st at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be speaking with two Philadelphia sports legends, Red Hamer, who used to write for The Bulletin, and Bill Werndell. Thank you all for joining us today for Living History.